This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Tim. Tim, what's going on, man?
Oh, doing good. Excited tonight. Giveaway when we're recording. I guess we already kind of break kayfabe on that anyways, but tonight is the night I'm going to see Jeff Cobb versus Josh Barnett. I am so fucking amped for this match. These guys are both amazing shoot backgrounds, both great pro-style wrestlers as well. So, super amped on that. Went to PWG last week. We talked about that. Can't wait to give the report on this. And the cool thing about this, it's AWS combined with Q Pro, quintessential pro wrestling out of here. It's a joint show together. The cool thing is it's much smaller, much cheaper than PWG. My wife actually gets to go, so that makes it even funner. Smaller crowd, kind of homey feel. But then you got a world-class match like this that I think could be, you know, a match on any card, on any kind of independent company, any out there would beg to have this match on it. So I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, I mean, Barnett, former UFC champion, trained, I believe, by Kurt Hennig, if I'm not mistaken.
Billy Robinson.
And Billy, I know he was trained shoot style by Billy, but I think he was trained pro style by Kurt.
I think that's probably correct, yeah.
Yeah, and stuff, with the Minnesota connection and stuff. Really, that should be pretty interesting and stuff. I know Jay, he's one of the guys Dana White despises is Barnett. So
that's because he could make it outside of UFC. And, yeah, you know, Dana's just like Vince.
Yes, very true, very true. I am going to Wrestle Circus Sunday. Hopefully I show up there and there's a wrestling going on. According to Rover, they were going down the drains on Twitter. You know, he swung, and I think he might have missed on this story, a swing and a whiff. But it happens when you go out there. That's probably why sometimes Dave Meltzer sits on some stories, because he wants to verify the facts. But you know what? Rover's not a journalist and doesn't get paid to be a journalist, so he can go out there and make and do that. But I was a little nervous when I first saw him, because a lot of times, Rover can be a guy who he starts it when there's smoke, there's usually fire type. A lot of times with him, sometimes you know he misses it. And I think this is the case of Wrestle Circus going down the drain. It was a little premature. Hey, maybe in 6 months they are. I don't know. But hopefully I'll show up and they're having a show tomorrow. What's your feeling? They're going to have a show tomorrow?
I would assume so. Do they have Harry Smith on the card?
Yes, they do.
I'll ask him tonight if he's flying out, if he's heard anything. How's that?
Okay. I mean, according to Twitter, Lance Storm is already packed and ready to go. So I'm hoping that all these people will be there and stuff.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That'd be pretty sad if I show up and there's a line and no one's in that building that's closed. Oh, wow. But yeah, we have quite a bit to watch. Although we watched, we have a PWX Ode to Tradition. We have the finals of the Canoodle Cup with the... I think Twitter might almost, I think one of the most talked about matches on Twitter is the Chip Day and Trevor Lee. Have you ever seen so much traffic? Really?
Not, I mean, fans? And just personally, I mean, I don't know about you, but I got Johnny P blowing up my mentions ever since the match dropped talking about this thing. I mean, yeah, it is definitely a big one. Definitely really getting people riled up. You're hearing different schools of thought from different people. You're also hearing people who are like, what's CWF? Which is pretty interesting. And yeah. And they're doing pretty good. As of right now, I mean, this is probably one of their most viewed videos on their YouTube. And that's just within a week still. I mean, over 5,000 views at the moment and still climbing.
Nice. I mean, yeah, I mean... I'm not a Twitter guy where I'm on Twitter constantly because it's not my thing, but I can see where people love it. I mean, I glance at my Twitter a few times a day, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, 75 notifications, are you kidding me? And it was like, what? I thought it was a virus, you know, on my phone, or someone hacked my Twitter account. But no, it's all over Chip Day, Trevor Lee, because God bless him. And you'll hear our thoughts on that. And then we are going to look at Evolve number. I mean, we're going to look at NXT television. And we've kicked Ring of Honor to the curb. Bon Voyage, Ring of Honor. Maybe if you get back, or you maybe if Delirious gets fired, or they become relevant again. And they just right now they just piss me off enough that I don't want to review them right now. Sorry guys. But we're going to then look at Evolve at number 83. We're going to finish up at. So we have a lot to cover. But let's start off with PWX Ode to Tradition. What do you think of the opening match of the Revolt versus White Mike and Jason Cade? And is Jason Cade and White Mike the most weird tag team ever?
Yeah, Cade and White Mike is an odd pairing. The Revolt really feel like they're in a holding pattern. I mean, White Mike is good with his clowning around here. He's got some great natural charisma, as we all know. But realistically, the other three guys in this match feel like they're in a holding pattern, just kind of stale booking here in PWX. But, you know, good for Mike. And I was kind of worried when it came to this because when, you know, when we were watching PWX more regularly, it was starting to, again, as I say, feel stale, especially with the Man Scout as the champion. I was not super into it, super excited with what was going on. And then I was worried that this was going to be kind of back to that, that kind of feeling for PWX. But, I think that they were able to pick it up after this match. I give this match 2.5 stars, and that's mostly just for Mike's charisma. The guy can kind of make anything work for me at this point, overall. What'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I'm with you right on right there. I'm at 2.5 stars. I thought White Mike's opening comedy spot ruled, where first K does this incredible dive and Mike goes, "Watch mine," and he does this ridiculous, stupid dive, and it worked for me. So, I mean, like that for me, that spot only would have worked in an opening match. If it was four matches in, I probably would have shit on it. I thought it was perfect for an opener, get the crowd fun, pumped up, and laughing. And the thing about White Mike, the band, the boy knows how to get over. We've seen him. He's not like this guy who has like an arsenal of 1,001 moves or anything. It's all based on him and his personality, and he's just getting over. I like the opening shine by the baby faces. The revival and getting the heat. Got the heat on White Mike. I like the Revolt's, I meant the Revolt. I like the Revolt's heel tags and double teams in the match. You get to see Cade with the getting the hot tag, and he's running wild. And then we see White Mike come in and do a little bit of this and that. You know, it was just a fun opener. 2.5 stars. Next match, Jeff Cobb versus James Drake. I love this match. Absolutely loved it. 4.25. Drake's the guy who's really, this last year or two, I've really become to like and think he's a really good worker. And, I mean, I've talked about enough Cobb where people know where I stand on him, and I thought these guys clicked. Drake's having a good year, really. People haven't really been talking about him. But I could see him making my top 100 wrestlers this year. And Cobb was a guy right before Mania weekend I was talking as the best wrestler, having the best year in between the ropes, but he didn't step up for Mania weekend. Big Hoss fight, hard hitting. Cobb's with those freaking suplexes were nuts. Cobb's athletic spots rule. Love how both guys are hard hitting. They're hitting hard. Love Drake's hybrid southern brawler and new age brawling styles meshed here. I thought they had a hell of a brawl. Really well worked. What do you think, man?
I am pretty much right there with you. I went 4-star on this bad boy. Love the start, the opening with the Husky Man quickness from the two of them. They can really keep up with each other and make it super impressive. And then after that, it's just a huge war with epic bomb throwing back and forth. Cobb is so good at throwing around the big men. He sells the fatigue. And I mean, I don't know if he's selling it, but my interactions with Cobb in, like, just at wrestling shows always tend to be about talking about him throwing around big guys. And he still sells it even at the gimmick table as he's talking about, oh, my back hurts so bad the next day. I don't know if it's legit or not. The guy, it just seems like such a monster that it feels like he can throw these guys around like nothing. But he sells it so well during the match, I buy it, that it's tough for him. Even with the stalling as he's holding guys up for deadlift Germans, you feel like he's just taking that extra minute so that he can prep himself to be able to pull this stuff off. James Drake responds in kind with his big bruising striking offense. I mean, the guys go tit for tat. Big man moonsault by Drake can't put Cobb down. Love that spot, as Cobb's just a big monster. But he does get put away with the drill bit for the finish of the match. As I said, 4-star. I think Cobb unfortunately has some personal obligations that affect his booking schedule in general. Just has to do with he's not working Evolve as much just because of the days of the week that they run. I think that did affect him a lot over WrestleMania weekend, because I think he was in the WrestleCon shows. I mean, if you were watching his match over WrestleMania weekend with David Starr, was fantastic. The match with Martin Stone was solid to good, depending on what your taste. Good to great. If you really like that style, I could see you definitely really liking that match. But then the problem there is that he also had the Bobby Lashley match that kind of shit the bed because of Bobby Lashley. And, you know, it is kind of, it's tough to blame him for his WrestleMania weekend, because if he had been within the WWN family, I think we're talking about Cobb having a fantastic weekend. But because he was, you know, kind of rolling with the WrestleCon crew, he didn't get that chance to really show it off. But James Drake, same thing. James Drake, as you said, I think guy is a little bit underrated right now, or underappreciated. The only time you hear him talked about is when people are saying that he's the better James Drake, when the UK James Drake is busy online talking shit about people criticizing his matches.
Was that proved to be the real James Drake, or it was?
I mean, he said it was him. Was there? I thought it was him. Was there an argument that it wasn't him?
I heard there was a rumor that was a fake one, but I'm not attuned to Twitter quickly enough to know if that was people talking shit or what.
Who knows? Either way, that's kind of the only time you hear the Southern James Drake really get talked about widely across the board, is just in comparison that he's the better James Drake. So that's unfortunate, because the guy is really good.
Fair enough. You know, on your talking point with Cobb, I mean, that's a fair talking point. But the bottom line is, his production, his output wasn't there, as in, like, top tier when he was fending off people who are, you know, because it wasn't like he was landslide running away with, like, Wrestler of the Year in my book, but I didn't think he helped himself Mania weekend.
No, and I agree. And I wasn't making an excuse to try to say, oh, he's better than what he is. I'm just saying
right. That
did affect his output WrestleMania weekend, unfortunately, but you still have to judge him based on what he did.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. What do you think of Chip Day versus Corey Hollis?
Enjoyed this match, not quite as much as the match before it, or the Chip Day match that we'll be talking about later. Lots of good heel stick from Hollis. I think he's really good at that. I like playing distracted. Hollis is kind of too busy thinking about other stuff and kind of going off and around in other places. But I like that he can, you know, he uses kind of grounded, cheap shots, but then will hit some high-flying strikes and stuff like that when he needs to, and I do really like that. Towards the middle, it does feel like Chip is hitting some just really huge-time kicks and strikes, and it's starting to feel like there's no way that he's going to lose this match. He's just has to put Hollis away. I like Hollis grabbing the rope to stop the whip, and then he spits in Chip's face, and that really changes the complexion of the match, as then Hollis is able to take back over. Hollis going after the ref was really kind of a nice little spot, and I think those spots, when peppered in properly, can work really well. When the guy pops up off the near fall and goes right after the ref, I thought that was fantastic. They brawl to the floor. Eventually, Chip gets DDT'd on the ramp, and I think this ends in a count out, correct? Yeah. Ends up with the count out, and the Hollis cuts the promo on Skyler, and I gave it 3-star all in all. I think good stuff, but I think it was kind of serving the narrative for the storyline of Hollis being more focused on Skyler and less focused on the match. And I think Chip did a good job to shine here, but unfortunately he was treated a little bit like window dressing for the overall big time angle.
Yeah, I kind of hate the fact that Hollis and Skyler have broken up, because I really like their tag team a lot. I just thought they were like a kind of like a redneck four horsemen type of unit. I like Hollis attacking Chip Day pre-match. I like Chip turning the tide with some of his nasty strikes. We get some back and forth. Hollis in control. I really liked how they paced the match. And another thing I really dug was how Hollis chop blocked Chip's leg to set up the trailer hitch. I thought that was a fantastic spot. It made perfect sense and had really good. I thought it had a good narrative there. But yeah, the count out, you know, never really works for whatever you're doing. I give it 3.25. And then we got Hollis's promo, and I thought it was a pretty effective promo. What about you?
Yeah, I think that Hollis is definitely, I mean, he's more well-rounded than I think he even gets credit for, because, yeah, his promo and his charisma is really, really solid.
Yeah, you know, him and Skyler, they both obviously know how to make people look good. That's why they're booked on NXT so often, because, I mean, it's not like they're that close to Florida, where they are, I mean, they're coming in regularly and, you know, making people look good, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Then we got Martin Stone versus David Starr with the Pure Rules. And, you know, I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm like, oh, man, overbooking. But you know what? I thought they did a pretty good job. But a lot of times these type of rules, they get a little cute and it just really gets under your skin. But, you know what? For the most part, I thought they did a good job here. I thought the grappling early on was well done. I liked how Starr was trying to evade the wrist control. And you see Stone is focusing after the arm. I love the psychology of Stone forcing an early rope break on Starr, and the way Starr sold it was good. It almost like, I don't know if he accidentally forgot about the rules or if he was working it. Either way, if he's working it, good. He tricked me because I thought I really believed that he fucked up in it. And now you see Starr after the arm, and Stone's headbutts are really nasty. Stone catches Starr in the crossface. And then we get the rope break, so now there's no more rope breaks. And I loved how Stone catches him again later on in the crossfakes, but there's no rope break. And so that played into the finish of Stone going over. Give it 3.5 stars. I thought they did pretty well with all the stips and what they were doing. A lot of guys, I think, could have just really turned this into shit, but I thought they did a really good job. It really would have hurt their match, but I thought they did. I thought they actually enhanced the match and stuff with the psychology. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I roll my eyes less at it to begin with because I'm one of the few, I think, psychopaths out there that loved the ROH Pure Title Championship. And I thought that it worked really well. But I get what you're saying because there's a lot of times when it's used as a gimmick match and it's not its own division as it was in ROH, it does kind of get bastardized and not done properly. Yeah. But I'm always kind of positive on it and hopeful that they'll do it right. And I think that they did it here really well.
That's pretty half cup full of you, man. I got to give you props, Timothy.
But yeah, I enjoyed the opening here. As you said, they're kind of feeling each other out. I did love that Starr is the one who ends up breaking the code of honor, the pure rules first, but he plays it off like it's an accident. So I think that works really well. And then Stone pops in, instantly throws a punch just to kind of tit for tat back with kind of going underhanded. So that worked really well too. And as you said, it did come across like maybe Starr did accidentally forget, but Stone's not going to let him get away with it, even if it was a mistake, which really plays into kind of the psyche of this Martin Stone character. He's a guy who, sure, he'll take you at face value and maybe he can even believe that it was a mistake, but that doesn't mean that he's just going to forgive you, you know. So I think that works out really well there. From there, I love that they do a lot of kind of bending the rules but not quite breaking them, stuff like suicide dives, working on the apron, like the big clothesline for a flip bump from Starr. Really impressive when a guy like Starr does stuff like that every now and then. It does make the moves look more impactful and like a bigger deal, and it just comes back to the less is more thing. I mean, with the flip bump on the clothesline, when Rikishi used to do it, man, was that a big fucking deal, because he's a big giant Samoan. He gets himself up and over, but now that everybody does it, it kind of turns into, well, does it matter? Well, if, you know, David Starr does it one time here and there, then it looks like a big deal. Love playing up the rope breaks. Starr gets his last rope break. Thought the finish was actually worked out really well, with Stone going for the crossface over and over again, and then finally able to catch the crossface, for the last one out of countering the rolling elbow from Starr. And yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I gave it 3.75. I think that these guys worked with the gimmick really well. They're both solid, kind of the perfect wrestlers for a match like this, as they can both play up the technical aspects, but they're also known for their high-hitting style. So they're, you know, they can kind of work around a gimmick like this really well and just kind of well-suited for to face each other in this match.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting they both wrestled each other because they're both guys. I probably, if I've been putting on a list, and I don't have a list, so this is just my hypothetical list that I haven't put on any paper whatsoever. But I would see Stone and Starr both battling out for similar spots on my best top 100 list, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I don't have them, but I've been formulating my top kind of 50 throughout the past couple days, and I definitely see Stone and Starr. They're both in that kind of top 15 to 20 range right now, and they're both, yeah, definitely kind of neck and neck.
Yeah, battling it out. You could either, you know, have a WrestleMania weekend. but hey, what do you think of Elgin and Anthony Henry?
So I liked the match, but I feel like Elgin just, he kind of established himself in Japan and he's made himself a big deal. And the problem too is that I watched this just a little bit after the Kyle O'Reilly match at PWG that of course no one's seen yet, and it just kind of back to back showed me the flaws of Elgin. He's trying to use the kind of the cachet that he has from being a big time kind of heavyweight in New Japan to put over smaller guys, but I feel like he still needs to really assert his size and his power believability. I think he went a little bit too 50-50, really selling everything for Henry like Henry was close to his size, and Henry is just so much smaller than him that, you know, a big flying enziguri, while it looks cool, I think Elgin needs to register and not sell over the moon like he's getting killed from every big strike. That said, I mean, this is, I hate to say it, but this is really your stereotypical kind of near fall kick out super indie kind of championship match, and I think Henry definitely excels at that style, but I think that he could definitely use to tone it down a little bit. I think Elgin, again, really gung-ho to put guys over, kind of goes a little bit too over the top sometimes, but I mean, there's some great spots in here. Awesome Death Valley Driver on the ring apron by Elgin looks just fucking nasty. Super Phoenix Plex from the outside in is a great near fall that the crowd buys into. Henry with the buckle bomb counter into the jackknife cradle was a great spot there. But yeah, I mean, all in all, I think you add in Elgin going for the belt and frustration, and that starts to feel like just kind of going over the top, trying to put over the story. And then finally, Henry's able to put him down with the big kick, which I like. And then Elgin cuts the kind of ace promo afterwards, trying to put Henry over even more. And that felt a little bit too put on even for me at this point. But 3.25 star, good, like I said, good action, good match, but the storytelling, and again, I think Elgin really needs to protect himself a little bit more as a big man here, even if he is going against the champion. The size differential is too much for me to buy into it 100%, but maybe I'm crazy. Pete, what do you think of this match?
Yeah, you liked it even a little more than me. I gave it 3 stars. It felt really weird. I don't know. Maybe I wasn't buying into the matchup because I felt like Elgin just seemed like all his stuff looked like painful and hurty. And almost Henry almost kind of looked like a pussy in the match. And his usual motif is usually his striking and stuff. And here it seemed like he was trying to use more of the speed game. And it was smart. Obviously, you shouldn't go toe to toe with Elgin because he's much bigger. But there was just something that just wasn't clicking with him. I thought part of it was during a lot of the match, I thought Henry was getting his ass handed to him. So for him to then come back and actually do a strike exchange later, I almost didn't buy into it because I thought he got his ass whipped so bad early on in the match. And then I felt the match felt unnecessarily long, where I felt they could easily cut 4 or 5 minutes off this and made it a lot more compelling. I felt after Henry's second comeback, I thought enough was enough. I didn't think we needed another one. And that's what it felt like, you know. It was like it just dragged instead of building to a climatic sense. It felt like, good, I'm glad it's over. So something they didn't, something they just did not, I didn't buy into, and it just didn't click for me overall. Next up, we got the Ducklings versus the Syndicate. I thought the shine by the Ducklings was real well done. Big high flying. Very lucha inspired. Hated how the Heat was set up. Absolutely hated it. It just felt like they just transitioned into the Heat instead of actually setting it up and doing anything logical. I hated that. With Lou just going into the heel corner, it just made Lance Lou look like a dumbass. Did not like it at all. I enjoyed the hot tag after Coach Mikey returns, making that a big moment. I enjoyed Killjoy running wild. I love Redden's big punch, or was it a punch or a clothesline? One of the two. Or no, it was this nasty forearm that cut off Killjoy. But again, this match felt a little too long, too. 2 3/4. Sometimes, again, just make it a little tighter. I think that would have enjoyed the match more. What do you think?
Pretty much there with you. I thought that the Syndicate looked really good coming out, and after the last time we saw them when they were being called, I think, the Others, and they were kind of playing that up a little bit too much. I was not into it, but I thought that now they kind of have a good uniformed look. Coming to the ring, they come across badass, so I like that. Definitely right. I wish that the Heat was set up more when it came in, but I did like Lance Lude selling during the Heat is always fantastic. The forearm cut off by Timmy to Killjoy was great too. I really liked that a lot. I did enjoy, you know, when the Ducklings get their shine going, they're cut off every time by double teams and power moves from the Syndicate, playing up their size. Definitely agree it went a little bit too long. I think Elijah Evans in the end looked a lot better than I've seen him ever before. He's not a guy that I'm really a big fan of, but I thought he looked good here. Towards, you know, when he was in at the finish, throughout the rest of the match, he really didn't exist. He gets the win with the drill bit, I guess, continuing a feud that he has with James Drake as he won the TV title from him. So, you know, whatever. I think, again, as you said, I think it went a little bit too long. I gave it 3 stars, though. I thought the Duck selling was good, and I think that they did a great job at the end of the match putting over really hard that was the Ducks' first loss in the company as a team. So that worked really well for me.
They did, yeah, I agree with you there. They did a great job, especially on commentary of that. Then we got Tracer X versus Darius Lockhart. What were your thoughts here, man?
This was another one that I think kind of got to show what we talked about before, that Darius Lockhart is a lot better when he's playing just a more kind of toned-down heel. He does really good kind of working over Tracer in the beginning as just a smarmy heel working over Tracer. Then we get Revolt on commentary, insanely annoying. Any kind of hope that Tracer gets, he gets cut off. There's a nice half-and-half suplex to Tracer that looks really devastating. Then, you know, Tracer kind of works, looking for a German suplex and eventually gets a pup handle suplex. I thought that was good that they kind of show him looking for it and trying to work to get his comeback. The Revolt kind of getting the distraction to set up the win, I thought was good for what they're trying to do here. And I think for a match that, you know, it had its good spots. I think Darius, again, very strong as a smarmy heel on top. Tracer good as an underdog babyface fighting, and then you've got the rest of the stable there to distract and help fuck him. It works really well from a basic kind of match like that, and this is a spot where kind of a fuck finish like that works, I think, in helping to continue to put heat on Darius Lockhart going forward. And I gave it 3 1/4 star. I think that there was some good psychology here and solid kind of subtle match.
You liked it more than me. I gave it 2 1/4. I liked the big opening salvo by Tracer X, and Darius returns the favor and stuff, and he's beating him up, and Darius puts Tracer into the turnbuckle, and he's focusing out to the back. Tiger Suplex gets 2. Big half-and-half suplex gives Tracer X some separation. Tracer X on a comeback. We see Darius nail sting Tracer X with a German. I mean, I really, there's a lot to like, but it just felt a little short. Like, I felt like they could have gone longer, actually. Like, I felt this match could have added some more time and helped. I felt a little too compact. They were telling a pretty damn good story. I really enjoyed Darius working over Tracer's back and the way he was going about doing it. I liked Tracer X's comebacks. I felt they could have milked out for some more time and could have cut off some of the time from some of the other stars. But you know what? Michael Elgin and Anthony Henry are, you know, that's a championship match, and the Ducklings are a big deal now. So I understand why this match got kind of short shrifted for time, but it's actually something I really liked. I just didn't think they had enough time to develop the story, if you will.
Yeah, no, and I could definitely, it could have used something where it felt like Carter, or I keep saying Carter, where Darius was in danger, and I think that it never really got to that point where it felt like it really paid off the heat for them interfering, because it seemed like he could have lost.
Yeah, exactly. Then we got Cody Rhodes versus John Skyler. I thought Cody's opening shine was pretty fun. Felt the tide turn way too easily, though. Where all of a sudden Skyler somehow hits him with a spear, and I thought the setup was convoluted a little bit. Skyler's working him over. I like Skyler focusing on the back and the chest area. Rhodes come back, trying to make the comeback, but it's cut off with an Irish whip back to the back. I really like that. Cody finally makes his comeback. Corey Hollis gets involved, and so becomes a, you know, one of these things. I enjoy that Skyler was able to be able to kick out of one of the crossroads, but I really, really bought into it. I thought the crowd would bite into it a little harder was when Hollis did interfere and Skyler took advantage and rolled up Rhodes. I thought the crowd would bite on that, because I bought on it. That was a great near fall. And when I rolled him up, I'm like, no way is he doing the job for Skyler. But I bought into it, but he did it. But then I felt they should have milked it for a little bit, that near fall, but they went right into Rhodes hitting the crossroads. So I felt all the goodwill they built up for that great near fall, I thought they shit the bed by going to the crossroads way too quickly. 2.5 stars. But I thought Skyler looked really good here. I thought he did a great job of doing a good job of making Cody look good. And then I think Skyler's the type of heel that Cody's could have a really good match with, because Skyler is a good Southern heel, even though he's kind of playing babyface here. What you make of it?
Pretty much right there with you. I thought that Cody seemed to step off with a couple things, like the big kind of double jump to the floor. He did the drop down punch and then the drop down kick, and it almost felt like too much back to back, almost like, cause the drop down punch was originally Goldust's thing. So it felt like he did the drop down punch forgetting that his thing is the drop down kick. So he had to get that in right afterwards. So just seemed a little off, but not terribly. I did actually like Cody going to the top. Skyler rolls to the apron, so Cody comes down, and that's what sets up the slingshot spear. I liked that because it played into Skyler's use of positioning in the ring and the ring itself as a weapon, as he then goes from that into sending Cody chest first into the turnbuckle over and over again.
I just felt that the setup was just way too cute, not realistic enough.
I could see that. As I said, I think it plays into Skyler's character of being the guy who does the kind of takes advantage of ring positioning and the ring itself as a weapon. But again, I don't know. He's kind of supposed to be a face now, so it doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah.
With a lot of his offenses staying the same, and I don't necessarily know if he can be a babyface using that kind of offense style. Cody, I mean, teasing that he's going to take the count out, but then doesn't, and then Hollis gets involved, and it's all kind of contrived and a little bit too much for me there with the overbooking, and then you kind of know that a lot of the overbooking is just coming down to protecting, or, you know, setting up Cody to win, but also protecting Skyler and the whole thing, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily work 100% for me. The heel face alignment was a little muddled throughout.
Because at times Cody was the heel, then he was the baby face. Like, he felt baby face early, but then he started teases using a chair. But then he does the devastation or the disaster kick on Hollis when he interferes, where should be happy. It was really weird. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. And I could definitely see, like, with me being a fan of a lot of the shenanigans that happened throughout the card, that people could kind of get down on me for complaining about the non-clean finish on the end of this, but I felt like it really kind of it hurt this match a lot in that, like, this was worked in the beginning as it was supposed to be, like, a big-time dream confrontation between the top star and the kind of traveling attraction kind of guy, and then when you end up fucking everybody over in the end with something like this that doesn't make any sense and kind of confuses everything, I think that that really does hurt the match. Just because of the table that you set. I think when you set the table to say, you know, this is a dream confrontation, then I feel like you're best to either pay it off with a real finish or even don't pay it off, but do something that feels a lot more 50-50 so that you set up for the rematch. This was just, again, as I said, just muddled and confusing. I gave it 3.25, though. I think the action was good. There was some stuff that I think I liked more than you, but still, all in all, I don't necessarily get to... Didn't get too into it, but thought it was worked well. I think Cody is definitely a solid star and definitely has a good aura and pops houses and is a big deal on the indies, and it's really impressive. And I actually kind of root for him because I was high on Cody even when he was still in WWE. So,
yeah, I mean, I haven't met him, but I hear he's a really nice guy at the indie shows. And so, you know, to me, It's not all about trying to impress us, the smart marks and smart guys. He's also the guy who also will draw little kids to the shows because he's, you know, Stardust, or he's Cody Rhodes, or he's a former WWE star who actually, you know, I think that's important on the indies. We don't have many of those type of characters who are out there on the indies working, and he's working all over, you know.
Yeah, and you can try to say wins and losses don't matter, and, oh, it's bullshit that he had to be protected and couldn't just, you know, lay down for Skyler here, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that Cody wins most of his matches, and Cody's a top draw. So I think that things are connected in some way that people don't even realize.
Yeah, exactly. You know, well, he's not doing enough jobs. I agree with you. I mean, if I was him, and he's making money, and he brings money to your promotion, you should protect him. You shouldn't be doing jobs. It's a little different when he's not a. It's one thing if it's a guy who isn't coming in, and I think he's helping enhance your promotion by working on the show. Am I a big Cody Rhodes fan? No, but I think he's an important cog on the current indie scene, and he definitely needs protecting because there's not that many guys who can come in and pop a house, and I think Cody Rhodes is one of them, you know?
Yeah, for sure, and we'll see how this Cow Palace show goes here in a couple days, because I think it's on the 6th of May, and we'll see if Cody's able to kind of bring that back as a viable place for indies, even indie companies to run.
Yeah, but running, who is he working, Joey Ryan?
In a cage.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, if he draws a sellout or even just draws really well in the Cow Palace in a cage against Joey Ryan, you have to give 100% credit to Cody for that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The Cow Palace, draws 12,000, 14,000?
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, I can't imagine him being able to do that. There's no fucking way.
Yeah, no.
We'll see, but there's just no freaking way. But more power to him. I'd have to say, though... I'd give the show a thumbs up. I mean, with the Cobb and James Drake match, which kicked all sorts of ass, and I thought everything on the show was at least passable to good, you know? I give it a thumbs up, man. What about you?
100%. Not a single match that I would call disappointing. Bad. No stinkers. Yeah. Actually, really strong, solid match. Something, I mean... 4.25 star for Cobb and Drake from you. That puts that in that, you know, match of the year contention list. I mean, that's, you know, that's a show to watch with everything else delivering solidly. I wouldn't call a single match on here bad. Even the opener that I wasn't a fan of, I think I still gave over 3 stars. So, you know, that's a show to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Check it out if you guys haven't. It's on the High Spot Network. On that note, why don't we take a break? And we'll be right back. And we'll be coming back strong with CWF Mid-Atlantic and the match that... Yeah, his Twitter buzz.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. We're back with CWF Mid-Atlantic, part three of the Canoodle Cup. Two matches. The first one is what's getting all the buzz, all the recognition. People want to hear what people are thinking. Hell, man, why don't you open it up with it? Because this thing is almost like a you're almost scared of. Throw opinions on it and insult somebody. Why isn't it 5 stars? What do you think, man?
This is a pretty epic match, and I think it's...
And what we're talking about is Chip Day versus Trevor Lee.
Yes, and what they did here was really impressive for a guy who's... I mean, for a company that's looked at as the, you know, the storyline company, the... This isn't your daddy's super indie. They brought in a guy. They gave him, I think, maybe one or two matches. And then they put him in a title match, and they built him up. I mean, you know, it's CWF, so they didn't just bring him in and have him challenge for the title like other companies would. But for CWF, he's relatively unknown to be getting a title shot. And he, you know, takes it to the limit with a guy who's been presented as the top star and the ace of the company and really goes to town on him, pushes Trevor to his limit. He gets pushed to his limit by Trevor. Lots of great back and forth. Found the commentary very interesting. You could almost tell that maybe they were kind of talking to a new audience in some ways, which is smart. But was it me?
I thought Cecil was absolutely incredible here, for breaking down stuff and giving us insights that you don't normally would hear on a commentary. I thought he was incredible on it.
Yeah, I think that Cecil here, again, as I said, talking to a crowd that maybe is new, I'm hearing from people who are first time or maybe infrequent CWF viewers saying, oh, you know, everyone always raves about Stutz, but I wasn't necessarily super into him, but I thought that Cecil Scott was the best color man on the indies that I've ever heard. Or I thought that he was just blew him out of the water. And I could totally see why. Because if this was one of your first experiences with CWF, he came across amazing. So well-informed, but also, you know, opinion. It's like he's giving you history mixed with opinion, mixed with color, kind of painting that picture.
Yes, the history and opinion right there. I mean, I was blown away by what he was giving us. It was I thought he was absolutely incredible. And it's not a knock against Stutz. I mean, Stutz was on his... normal point, but it felt like Cecil was cool, calm, and collected by telling us the story, what was happening, and explaining the nuances, and I thought he was just incredible.
Yeah, and I think that we go crazy for Stutzy so much that we almost forget how good C-Bear really is. You know what I mean? He almost goes underappreciated because he's kind of overshadowed, but I think he really knocked it out of the park with this match. And again, a big match for a lot of people to get their eyes on it for the first time.
I saw Dylan Hales on Twitter mention that here some people were complaining. I saw rumblings of people complaining about the commentary. Did you see any of that?
I saw a little.
I didn't. So What were they saying? I'm curious.
It's more or less the same stuff that you would expect from Tsetse, not necessarily flat-out saying regional biased, but kind of in that way. He doesn't fit at all the mold of what, let's say, someone who primarily watches WWE would expect from a commentator. His voice, he can be a little shouty. He can be a little over the top with exaggeration. You know what I mean? That's kind of the go-to kind of attacks on him, which, as I said, if you think about it comparatively to maybe someone who their primary exposure is what WWE puts out, and the idea that, you know, Vince McMahon was sick and tired of JR for being too over the top or whatever, you could kind of definitely see that, because I don't know. I mean, I know that Stutz has a lot of influence, but I couldn't imagine that he doesn't take some influence from JR. You know what I mean? And if
I would think so. I see a lot of JR and Stutzy.
Yeah, exactly. So if your kind of exposure to wrestling is you're younger, even younger than me, and you're primarily used to like Michael Cole, this feeling like a whole nother world could almost feel a little off-putting, I think, is kind of what people got out of it. And that was kind of the attack on Stutzy there, which I find. No, I can understand it. It takes different kinds, and then I think also some people were a little defensive, because Stutzy's our guy, and everyone really loves him, you know, because he does bring that old school flavor. That when you hear people talking shit, some people got a little defensive and were saying stuff about, like, objectively, you're a bad wrestling fan if you don't like Stutzy and stuff like that. So that's kind of, I think, where the kerfuffle happened with all of that.
Okay, fair enough. You know, I count me in as a Stutzy fan, but, you know, like, even last week I criticized, I didn't think they hit home the angle with the Carnies and Trip Cassidy strong enough on commentary. So, I mean, even fans of his can, you know, find a flaw. I didn't like on the PWX show that he used the term spot instead of maneuver or whatever. I mean, those are small little things, but you know what? But he also works inside the wrestling business, so if anyone can use him, he can. Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, that's the thing about this, as you said, this match. It's like you almost don't want to say any opinions. So talking about the kind of production and everything around it, and even just breaking down the reactions to it, is almost feels safer than talking about the match itself at this point, which is not necessarily true. I don't think anybody's going to jump all over me for my opinions on this match, honestly. I'm high on it.
Your wife has got to walk you to come to and from work.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. This match is fantastic, and I'm kind of on record as being not the biggest Chip Day, like, supporter. And I am a fan of Chip Day. I think he's really good. But I kind of, you know, I poke fun at him for personal reasons, just because I think it's kind of funny and fun. But he really came in here as a guy who's not super well established, and really made you believe that he could win this match. And I love the way that he fought with an intensity and kind of a determination to make his name off of Trevor Lee's name and make his name off of Trevor Lee's back that was really super believable. When he took Trevor Lee, as the commentary talked about, you know, that Trevor wasn't getting to wrestle his kind of match. I think opening on, they really were filling each other out on the mat. That definitely is Trevor's kind of forte in CWF, as they put it. But halfway through, I mean, it's just strikes after strikes after strikes, and it's Trevor really just getting worked over. And I mean, he's kind of counterpunching instead of going for that technical savagery that he normally does. And I think that Chip did a really good job of playing this guy who just is throwing the champion off of his game completely and keeps coming and is just unstoppable and insurmountable odds. And I mean, they're pretty much meant to be evenly matched, I guess, is how you look at the match as it goes through. And I mean, it turns into really just an epic just war between these two. I mean, the slugfest towards the end, the way that the strikes have just taken it out of each other back and forth, for, you know, what's a 30, God, it's close to 40 minute match, I think, after all is said and done. And I mean, it really barely even started going for the first 20 minutes. It was kind of still, they were just feeling each other out, and it was still, like, super engaging and super impressive. I mean, this was not your, you know, Okada 40-minute epic. This was something completely other, where you, every minute of it was engrossing from start to finish. And I heard some comparisons to saying, like, a WWE main event style, which I find very interesting, as I think it's almost, it's almost, as you've talked about Okada, in the vein of, let's say, Bockwinkle or Bret Hart or Ric Flair, this match almost felt like a parody of Okada doing a parody of a Ric Flair match. You know, it was like, it was a mix of modern New Japan with the old kind of Carolinas flavor. And while obviously they're getting the influence directly from the Mid-Atlantic, because that's where we're at, and they grew up on the stuff, both of these guys. So it did kind of feel like it was just influenced and dusted that way, with kind of strong style and the Japan ethic of how you work a match, mixed with the old school Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title matches, that kind of put NWA on the map, put Crockett on the map, that kind of stuff. For me to say star rating, I mean, I've watched this match like 4 or 5 times now, and trying to put a star rating on it has been near impossible. So what it comes down to is, if I can't say after watching it once that it's 5 stars, then I can't say that it's 5 stars. And I just think that that's the way that Meltzer describes giving his star ratings. I think that Bruce Mitchell said 5 stars from seeing it live. That's what he thinks. So I got to go 4.75 for this one.
Okay. I went 4.5. And, you know, I liked a lot of this stuff. They start off and they're doing a kind of like we know each other story. We see a couple mirror spots. We see some counter spots. We see some quick escapes, etc. You know, these guys have wrestled each other. They've been on shows, countless shows where they've both been on the same show. So you kind of buy into that story. But for me, it's one of the hardest things to do, and it's a story that I don't really care. I don't like. With that said, I thought they did the best they could with that story they were doing. I just don't like that story. Off the bat, I was kind of negative into this match. But clearly they won me over. I liked the mat work of the match, especially the ring positioning of both guys. They looked like both guys were very comfortable on the mat. And not only that, but they knew exactly where they were at all times. I absolutely adored the leg checks by Chip Day. I love how Day in the match was doing everything humanly possible to avoid the arm, He was definitely did not want Trevor to get his arm, and he did everything humanly possible to avoid it. Just loved it. I liked how Day, they had the spot where Day and Lee each had each other's arm legs, and they put it down, but Day struck quickest and nails him with this nasty kick, which, you know what, it was almost heelish, where it could have turned him heel, but it didn't. Because I almost came across a little heelish, like he jumped the gun a little quickly. But I absolutely loved Lee's response to that, which is like a caveman slam, and then he's ground and pounding him, and which finally sets Lee up to get the arm. And Lee's working it over big. I'm liking this. Day selling the arm big. Lee attempts the break special, only to get leg kicked. Again, going back to the earlier part of Day setting all this groundwork of hurting the leg. Loved it. Lee's ladder bump, which I call the not ladder bump, but Lee's header bump from the top off the kick was boss. You know what I'm talking about? Where he takes that, he's on the top rope, Day kicks him, and he takes that header bump into the top turnbuckle. Awesome.
So I was on mute. Yes, that spot was fucking phenomenal. I loved it so much. Okay. He lands with his shoulders and back right onto the top turnbuckle there.
Yeah, we're reviewers. We're not known for our timing. We're not wrestlers. Day's kicks again are just nasty. Lee with a lariat, and I absolutely loved that great spin bunk by Day. Liked the earlier strike exchange, and the reason I liked it because both guys were selling the blows. They were hurting each other, so I enjoyed that. I loved that near fall on the spin kick. Fantastic. I thought Trevor's STF looked stiff as fuck. That thing was incredible looking, and then we get this great one count that meant so much because they built to this spot. And then we get this incredible strike exchange where a lot of fans of New Japan Pro Wrestling don't understand. They just see it. I'm like, okay, check a box. We got our strike exchange. But how they built, and then here when they no-sell it, because they're at their climax of the match, and they're freaking, we've already seen them sell the damage earlier, so now they're doing everything they can to beat the crap out of each other. It meant so much at that moment in time. And then we get, it goes right into the incredible finish of Trevor finally getting this finality of the finish. Absolutely loved it. Again, couple gripes was I wasn't a big fan of the mirror spots early as the base of the match early on. And by I'm using the term mirror spots, but it wasn't just mirror spots. Only like maybe one or two of those. But it was more of the counters and the quick punches. I wasn't a big fan of the big the cartwheel spots they did. I felt, because this match was all gritty and nasty, full of nasty strikes. And they do that like little la-la cartwheel stuff. I thought it took away from the story a little bit. But man, 4.5 stars. I think live, like I was telling on Twitter, is I think it probably did come across more special because they didn't rely, they didn't like close in on Chip breaking down and crying because of how emotional the match was to him, because he knew he just had a classic and of all the other things involved. But live, there's no camera angle, no camera shot, so you get to soak in what he was doing, and I think it would have registered a lot more. And I think that, I mean, I'm not saying the camera people did a bad job, because I mean, it's just a tough call. Do you focus on somebody breaking down emotionally? Is that fair? I don't know. You know, I think it was a tough call to focus on that or pull away from it. I think at times you don't want people to feel uncomfortable watching somebody break down, but it was a good way. He was breaking down for a good reason, not a bad reason. He wasn't like having a mental breakdown. He was breaking down because of how emotional the match was. Loved Trevor Lee putting him over afterwards. I felt it felt genuine. And on top of it all, as being an old school wrestling fan, absolutely loved Stutzy in between setting up the tag match, talking about the final conflict, which was Don Carnuto and Sergeant Slaughter versus Steamboat and Youngblood, where Flair and Valentine did a 60-minute draw. It was the underneath match, just kind of like the semi-main, just like Chip and Lee here were. And luckily, we got this match on tape. The Valentine Flair match is still out there in the ether. Maybe the WWE Network will hopefully find it one day. But we finally found just 10 years ago, I believe it was, maybe even less. We finally, the final conflict finally came onto to fruition where people can see that incredible match. But man, this was a great match and stuff. My small critique keeps it from, you know, to the upper echelon of stuff. Where would you rank this? I mean, for me, this is my third favorite match. And you know what? The more I sound by listening, the way I'm talking about it, I feel like I'm talking myself into liking it more than the Brad Attitude match. So I might go, this one is my number two. And I really need to go revisit this match because on paper, I mean, the way I'm extruding it, I feel like I'm in love with the match right now. But I think I have it number two now. Behind Lee and Everett, and then Brad Attitude and Lee. What about you? What do you have in your Trevor Lee title defense?
For the Trevor Lee title defense debate, right? This is a big deal. It's hard to not put this as the number two because of just how obviously amazing it is. But yeah, I mean, for me, still the number one is definitely the Andrew Everett match. And this would probably be number two. The problem, too, with CWF is stuff like the Brad Attitude match. I mean, CWF is so much about storyline and emotion and everything else coming together. And sometimes I feel like I try to be kind of all-encompassing with my star ratings, but I can't help it that sometimes my star ratings reflect bell-to-bell physicality more than it reflects emotion and storyline. 100%. Just cause, and I mean, that's not, you know, I'm not one of these cold, calculating monsters who doesn't appreciate drama and wrestling or whatever. And I may not be the guy who likes lucha wrestling because I don't like wackiness, but at the same time, I still can appreciate storytelling and drama and all that. And it doesn't reflect in my star ratings, not because I don't appreciate it, but because that's a hard thing to account for. And it's easier for me to use almost like a rubric for star rating that comes down to physical technicality stuff that happens.
I mean, it's definitely better than Big Lab. So I mean,
yeah, you know, my system is just kind of using my gut. I use the Colbert star rating system, and sometimes my gut doesn't account for just how emotional I got. So the Brad Attitude match, I could see being above this just because of, you know, not just because, but because of the emotion.
Yeah, I had, like, earlier today I had it, but when I just but you know what? If I redid my review of Brad Attitude, I'd probably put it number two. I'm going to stick to my guns, and I have Attitude number two. I have this number three.
Right, because it just, it meant more story-wise, and it really yeah. was like the coming of fruition of the whole thing. But then
and
also...
And Johnny P's video, pre-video of it also helps too.
Right. And but then there's also the match with Eric Royal from the Rumble, the CWF Rumble.
Yep.
I mean, that match, if you're just judging stuff by in-ring action, that match was just about as good as anything else that Trevor's done, you know, in this title reign in-ring-wise. I thought both guys really brought it there. The problem with that one was just, you know, not as much build. And we even talked about the Cedric match. I thought the Cedric match had a lot of great emotion going around with the fact that Cedric was leaving, but it didn't really have the same feel that it would have if it was happening now, as Trevor is more kind of established as the man.
I love the six-pack challenge, too.
Right, so it is tough to rate everything, but when it comes down to it, for me, the Andrew Everett match is still number one. I think that those guys just, their history, it was a great mix of them both being at their peak physically. They're both being on their game for psychology, especially Trevor, and also the history that they have with each other and the story when it comes to them, you know, kind of fighting each other as almost like, not equals, but almost as like rivals, generation rivals. That kind of peaks that, having hit all the boxes. And then this one got to go number two just for the pure kind of athleticism and in-ring action for me. And then number three is the Brad Attitude match.
And let's talk about the match a little bit more in depth. Not in depth, but how awesome was it? It was a babyface match, and they kept the crowd the whole entire time. I mean, obviously, Trevor, this is Trevor's town. This is Trevor's building. But Chip Day was pretty damn over in that building too, huh?
Yeah, and Chip Day, I mean, as stupid as it is, pro wrestling's James Dean, like, fits Chip Day. Like, I hate to even, like, you know, accept such a dumb nickname, because I kind of think it doesn't work when you're, I'm whatever's whatever, when you're, like, comparing yourself to the... But, like, him being the outsider who comes in, he's kind of a rebel, but he's just got that charisma, and the crowd just buys into him as kind of that badass babyface. And so, yeah, the crowd loved him. They were super into him instantly, even though it is Trevor's town.
That's what I got away from most of the match, is that, wow, the crowd responding to Chip like he's, you know, he's a big deal, and I loved it. I can't put over the match enough. 4.5 to 5 stars, people are saying. I mean, you gave it 4.75. We've just seen it. A lot of buzz. It's been a great, great buzz. I'm glad for CWF Mid-Atlantic to get this type of buzz. Great on a big show at the Canoodle Cup to get over the crowd and the match, and it played so well. It did not, when, you know, you're hearing all this talk between Johnny P and Dylan and Bruce Mitchell and host of others, and it didn't lay a fart in church, you know, and it was like, wow, this is a great freaking match. And it was just a throwback with new age nuances to it. Just guys, I mean, these guys should be proud of this piece of work. And I can't say I'm so proud of these guys, and I hope we see a rematch down the road, brother.
Yeah, no, I mean, two great workers, two phenomenal workers. Definitely feel very invested in Trevor Lee as a whole, and have been for a while. And Chip Day, another guy who, again, I've had my little kind of jabs here and there at him, but I think he's phenomenal as well, and I'd love to see this match revisited for sure.
All right, man, let's get to the main event of the Sandwich God versus Royal and Wilkins. I thought this was kind of the perfect compliment, and I gave it 3 stars. I liked the shine from the squad working Wilkins' arm early. Royal, I like seeing Royal run and be on his bike. I like squad keep on pushing the action. Finally, the numbers catch up to the squad, and the heels are working over Mecca's leg. I liked Mecca reversing it only for Royal to nail him in a compromising position. I loved it. Loved the golf swing into the Royal clip of the leg. Incredible spot, and that's something they damn well should use a lot. I absolutely loved the Cornodal spot here where they come in, put the sleepers on the heel managers. I thought this was the perfect way to use the local legends where they don't outshine the local talent. But you know what? Managers are there to be foils and to be set up men. And that's exactly what Coach and the guy was. And they got the Cornodals got to put the Weaver lock on, which is if you know your Carolina's history, it was a huge thing from Johnny Weaver, and Johnny Weaver passed it on to Dusty Rhodes, and it was a huge, huge spot in the 50s and 60s in the Carolinas. You know, got a little sports entertaining, but you know what? I thought that's what it needed to be, and I absolutely loved the post-match with the Cornodal brothers bringing out the sandwiches. It was a little cheeky. But you know what? It's a babyface moment, and I thought that was a really neat touch. And we have the Cornodal brothers out there with the babyface champions and the winners of the Cornodal Cup. What would you make of it? I give it 3 stars. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, I'm probably at 3.5 with you on pretty much everything. The zaniness, the kind of overbooking sports entertainia, worked out as a contrast to not only just the big match that was before it, but the rest of the tournament. I think this is how you kind of send everybody home. They mixed in a lot of stuff, as you said, with the managers, with the hoopla from them, with the Cornodal brothers, the great hoopla from them, and then Nick Richards coming in as the very end to kind of be the icing on the cake to go back to that storyline, which I think is he really has felt like the kind of the focus of this year so far. The match itself, I mean, I think you hit everything really well, but one thing that I think I really, really appreciated in this match was Eric Royal putting over the Sandwich Squad so big, selling for them huge, bumping huge, has nothing for him early on when it's just straight up head-to-head, no cheeky bullshit involved. And I think that just goes to show, if you protect yourself long enough, as I was talking about Michael Elgin earlier, if you protect a character long enough, if you make the character really have this kind of big aura around him, when he then turns around and sells, it means so much more. And him just, you know, having no answer for the Sandwich Squad as they're these two big behemoths, really does kind of put them over even stronger in this big victory. Again, lots of great action. The golf swing to the ref was a great spot and looked just fucking phenomenal. That golf swing is such a great striking spot for Wilkins. Every time, I think it looks great. And then meanwhile, I had just watched some Nova Pro, which I actually review or talk about the company itself on my other podcast. We'll do it live recently with Dylan Hales and the Lady J. That's a nice little worked in plug there. I'm not going to say cheap plug because I feel like that saying's overdone. Where we were talking about, I was just watching Nova Pro recently and seeing the Sandwich Squad over there wrestling a 4-on-2 handicap match. They were really working the kind of super indie style with big spots and near falls. And just seeing that the Sandwich Squad is able to work that style as well, it's kind of upsetting that they're not getting booked more in other places, because I think that they could fit in on any company that you want a monster tag team. I think that they can do it. I think that they're overlooked because they don't work those kind of work rate matches in CWF, but they can do it if given the chance. So it was definitely impressive to see them here working even different than what they normally do in CWF. Here they're working more of a sports entertainment match with all the bells and whistles and hoopla, and I think that they did a great job. And as I said, 3.5 star and a great way to finish out this tournament. And I hope that the all-star team of Eric Royal and Roy Wilkins was not just thrown together for this tournament and that's it, because they actually became one of my favorite tag teams.
Yeah, they're like the Midnight Express. They're freaking incredible. they're like the great heel 80s tag team. I loved them. Easily one of the best hours of wrestling we've seen all year, huh?
Oh, yeah. And hopefully Bruce Mitchell, with his connection and friendship with Dave Meltzer, can talk to him so that maybe next year all these votes for CWF Worldwide for TV Show of the Year don't get thrown in the trash just because it's on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a joke, you know? I mean, that's like NXT's on the freaking network, you know? I mean, I guess because you pay for it. But still, it's TV. It's producing something. I don't know. Big hats off to everybody involved in this, in the whole entire tournament, from the fans to the commentary team to the production crew to the wrestlers to everyone. Just great job, man. This is an incredible, incredible hour of television here, and hats off to you guys. You have anything you want to say about CWF before we move over to NXT?
No, I mean, if you haven't watched this match, go watch it. As I explained to former guest on my other show, Lucha Undead, Drew Wardlaw from the Burning Spirit podcast over on Voices of Wrestling, he kind of popped in to watch this match and said, I always want to watch more CWF, but I don't because I feel like I don't know the backstories, blah, blah, blah. The commentary does such a great job of getting you up to date on the storylines and everything pretty much instantly that you can pop in whenever you want. So I would say that, you know, CWF is a hard show, I think, for anybody to kind of watch a la carte. I think it's a show that you need to follow. So I say, don't worry about needing to start from the beginning. Pop in now, watch this great match, and stay hooked and stay engaged, because the online presence for this company is great. The build for this company is great, and the payoffs are always delivered for this company. So I just say, you know, they really kind of hit it out of the park here. And I can't urge you enough to go watch it.
Agreed. And now, man, we're going to move over to NXT. And it opens up with Nikki Cross calling out Ruby Riott. And we get this pretty fun brawl between the two girls. What do you think of this, man?
I loved it. I liked Nikki Cross's accent, even. I thought that it was nice, kind of playing off of her character. She's kind of just playing this insane, kind of wacky, back and forth, I don't know, borderline personality disorder freak. Ruby Riott and her brawl around. I heard Brian Alvarez shit on this brawl like it was so bad. I thought it was fantastic. I think that they bring a lot of hate and emotion to this feud, and I'm super excited for these two to get their one-on-one singles match in a big setting here pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it gave a big shot in the arm to the women's division in NXT, don't you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think that Ruby Riott is definitely... full disclosure, personal aesthetics, Ruby Riott's my kind of gal. You know, I'm just going to put that out there. But I also really enjoy her as a wrestler. I've talked about her many times on the show before as Heidi Lovelace. And I think she's definitely exactly what they needed to make this women's division feel important right now.
Then we get a Bobby Roode interview, you know. Typical Bobby. What do you think of it, man?
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Roode, I don't know how to put it. The guy just, he does nothing for me, but I can definitely see how other people would really be into him. And he definitely always hits his character almost perfect.
Then we got Drew McIntyre, Cena, Almas. You know, fun little bout, but kind of like, you know, they really didn't give us... I mean, I don't think this is just a taste for a feud either. It just felt like it was there just for McIntyre to go over. What about you? What do you think of this?
Yeah, it felt like a squash situation, and it's kind of interesting because it really felt like they gave a lot more. Or maybe it was just the way that he fights, but it felt like that match last week with Biff made Biff look like more of a competition to Drew than Almas did here, which is really kind of interesting as you turn around and kind of bury Almas. I think in the beginning, it's a lot of Almas playing up the kind of the little cheeky facial expressions and poses that he does, but... I don't know where they're going with Almas. It's kind of weird here. McIntyre looks good. I'm happy that they're serious about him, but I wish that they wouldn't just give up on Almas as soon as he kind of got going with his heel persona.
Yeah, I totally agree. Then we get a Roddy Strong video package, which was absolutely fantastic. What about you?
What the fuck was this, right? I didn't know Roddy had this. This story was amazing. The emotion, felt like he was going to start crying. I just felt so invested in Roddy, and Roddy's a guy that I've loved forever. I mean, I knew his dad was a wrestler. I knew his dad was a bodybuilder, but I didn't know all this other stuff. I mean, god damn, like, this is how you get a guy over. This is how you get people invested in a character right here. Yeah, Jesus.
Amazing. Then we got Black Thorn versus Peel. Who do we wrestle?
Aleister Black versus Kona Reeves.
Yeah, what do you think of this?
another squash situation, even faster than the other match. Reeves is a guy who looks really good. I can't believe that they're just going to use him like this, but we'll see how they go from there. Black uses that. He picks the guy up with his foot to hit the big spinning back kick.
Blackout.
Yeah, the blackout. Or black mass. Wait, it's the blackout, right? That's it.
No, it is the black mass. I call it the blackout.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're sticking with the blackout.
We're sticking to it much better. And then we get a Ruby Riott interview. And it was you know, it was what it was, right? It was kind of weird because she didn't really say a whole album a lot. What did you think of it?
She said nothing. She said it forcefully, which was good. She has likability and charisma. She's believable. But there's the issues that just come down to how they produce things in NXT, WWE, that hurts it, which is staring off into the distance, not able to, you know, connect with the camera, certain verbiage that doesn't feel like how a real person talks. But the weird thing here was the interviewer, was it Christy St. Cloud?
Yeah.
Her makeup was insane, and her facial expressions were, like, vaudevillian. Like, she was trying to do panto or something. Her facial expressions were insane. So we'll see if they tone her down here pretty soon.
Yeah, it's almost like Hunter. I don't know if Hunter interviews these girls, like he make him give them blowjobs and he looks at their facials. I'm not sure because it's just wacky. Then we got our boy Almas leaves with some gals with another interviewer following him out asking questions. I'm beginning to hate this storyline if they're gonna make Almas look like a fool. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I'm just like, what's going to be the kind of the stakes? What's going to be the repercussion here? That Almas wants to party and he doesn't care about his wrestling. Is Regal going to put him in a, you know, if you lose, you're fired situation? I just, the problem with NXT too is that, I mean, the stakes of your career being on the line have been turned into a joke when so many guys, a loser leaves town match, you actually know is a loser goes to SmackDown match. You know what I mean? So it's just, how do you really make this storyline work?
Exactly. And then we got Cross and Riott, and they end up with a brawl. The match never really happens. Good. I like this. I like the angle. What about you?
Yep, I love it. Protect the match. Keep it heated. Build up to something bigger. I was like hoping that they weren't going to go just straight to the match here, and they did not, which is kind of perfect for the storyline that they're building, because the women's division, while Asuka is, you know, concretely at the top, needs to have some undercard or, you know, underneath feuds that have meaning, and this one does, so keep it protected and make it into a big deal.
Yep, need some supporting actresses who can lead a movie eventually. Then we got Regal out, and he is announcing a female battle royal, and really pisses Asuka off, and she walks out. Yeah, good. Well, what about you? Which, I mean, anytime I see Regal, I'm happy.
Yeah, Regal's fantastic. Playing off of Asuka is good. And I'd like to see them continue on with this kind of storyline that Asuka is sick and tired of Regal not being able to provide her with some real competition.
Then we get Tyler Bate and Gallagher, and man, I like this. Very World of Sport. Love the limb work. Really good struggle to it. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good legit 3.5-star match. What about you? What do you think of it, man?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I talked about before that I think Bate, in a toned-down WWE setting, is actually better off. And I think that going against Jack Gallagher here even kind of showed that even more, where I think that these two, left to their own devices in progress, would have probably tried to get a little bit too cute, maybe put in a little bit too many near falls, maybe done a little bit too many kind of advanced, you know, grappling spots that they didn't need to. But instead, they kind of stuck to the basic game plan for a, you know, main event on a TV show match, delivered in spades with a, you know, as you said, 3.5-star range match, and really felt gritty at times, had some fun, had some slapstick, but also had some really kind of fantastic aggressiveness, and also showed off both their technical prowess. I thought that this was a really great match. If you were introducing these characters to a crowd, which in some ways they still are introducing Tyler Bate, kind of instantly puts them both over and shows off what they're good at.
And introduces the British flair, since they're doing a British what are they doing?
Oh, they're gonna do a British TV show similar to 205 Live, I guess. So
that's... yeah, so that's important to have that flair. You gotta have it make it different. And I'm not saying everyone needs to be working a World of Sports style, but you do need to be able to do that style at times, you know.
Well, yeah, and even the world of sports style varied from you know, some guys to some guys. So
yeah,
this kind of showed you one style, but they can continue to go down the road and show you some other stuff. And then also mix in some guys who do. I mean, Wolfgang, I think, is the furthest thing from a world of sports style wrestler. So you got him, too. So, yeah, I mean, you're really introducing the crowd to this whole kind of interesting show and based off of this match.
Yep, and that's NXT, folks. Another good solid up good hour of television, I thought, you know. Just feels like it fails way in comparison to what we saw at CWF Mid-Atlantic, but still, you know, you're not comparing them because they're each peeking at different things and trying to do something else, but I thought what they did here, I really enjoyed the Ruby Riott and what's her name?
Nikki Cross.
Nikki Cross build. I really enjoyed them going there. I enjoyed the Gallagher and Tyler Bate match. I'm impressed with how they're building up McIntyre and Black. So they're doing a good job, you know. I mean, yeah, they're gonna have some misses that I'm not liking, but you know what? Let me wait to see how the story plays out with Almas. I don't want to shit up the bed all over it. Maybe they have something lined up that I don't see coming down the pike. What were your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I mean, this was an episode of the show, as you talk about, compared to CWF. This is building. CWF was kind of peaking on that episode. But this was an episode of NXT where I could have seen, maybe a few months back, people would say, boring one-match show. What was the point? But all the other stuff underneath that, again, wasn't really high-caliber wrestling matches, still delivered for what it was. So I haven't heard that critique of this episode at all anywhere. I think everyone's critique was this was really good because everything delivered for what it was meant to be. Everything was really solid and it kind of built towards something that you care about. And then you did get that main event caliber match at the top that didn't go over the top and kill you like you would for a pay-per-view main event or a New Japan Super Show main event, but it definitely delivered as a TV main event that had a decisive winner and kind of teased the future of an entire brand. So this was a very solid episode of NXT.
Yeah, and I agree. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be coming back with Evolve 83.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back, and we're back with Evolve 83. I thought this was the better. I don't know. Did you watch Evolve 82?
I did.
I thought this was far better than 82. What about you?
Yeah.
I would say far better, but I thought it eclipsed it pretty handedly though.
Yeah, Evolve 82. I mean, Evolve 82 also had that albatross around its neck of the main event. That
yeah.
Really hurt the entire show overall, but. This is better overall. I mean, there was maybe one match on Evolve 82 that I liked a lot more than anything on this show. Maybe two, but this show overall was much better.
Alrighty. We open up with Austin Theory versus Ethan Page. What were your thoughts here?
Ethan kind of really kind of eats this guy up. Theory gets some token spots in, but Ethan Page really just takes it to him. And I kind of did like the finish out of nowhere with Austin Theory. Looks like he's getting rolling. And, I mean, I guess literally is rolling into him, gets caught into the spinning Dwayne boom pin. Paige looks super dominant over a guy who Theory hasn't been given a lot, but also has been treated like a guy on the rise and a guy that you wouldn't expect anybody to eat up like this. So I think it does help build Paige up to, I think he's getting a title shot coming up, but 2.25 star, not a match that I necessarily would say you have to go watch.
Yeah, you know, Ethan Page is a guy who's grown on me. I like the fact that he actually goes, genuinely tries to go for actual heat, and he's not about flips and dives and awe-inspiring spots. But he needs a dance partner, and it's not Austin Theory here. This is more of a trying to. This is more to again establish Page as this dickish asshole. But you know what? I don't think does Paige need a guy who's willing to die for us for him, like Darby Allin? I'm not sure. I'm not sure anyone who can. I'm not sure there's somebody who can like work super babyface to Ethan Page's assholeness. So I don't know if the character might be too dated for today's wrestling. I'm not sure, or in the evolved setting because it's such about work rate. But I'm curious. The bottom line is he's getting over it as a heel. People are booing and people are responding to him. I'm just curious if it can sustain. I hope it does. But here, I enjoyed Paige. He's a true heel. He gets heat early on. Theory makes a comeback. Some back and forth. Paige eats him up. Yeah, I give it a star and 3/4. Just really didn't do a whole lot for me. Then we got Catch Point and Stokely. I love this segment. I love Stokely as the now the manager of Catch Point. I love Yehi quitting. I never really wanted him to be a point member of Catch Point last year at Mania. I was like, no, not you, Fred. So I hope they're going to give Fred, strap the rocket to him and really give him a big, strong babyface push. I would have loved to see Stokely do the Catch Point sign wrong. I think that would have been a funny spot. But I don't know if that what you really need him doing comedy. But you know what? Bobby Heenan was able to walk that line of comedy and getting heat. I think I would have liked to see Stokely try to do something like that. What do you think of the segment?
Yeah, when you do it where the joke's on you as a heel manager like that, it works. And not necessarily like you're in on the joke, oh, isn't it so funny? But yeah, like if he does the Catch Point thing and he does it wrong, yeah, that's great. Or, you know what I mean? Stuff like that definitely works. The segment itself, I think it serves two masters as it really continues to set up this idea that that Williams is becoming the new Drew Gulak. And it kind of sucks because he's such a direct comparison to the guy who was just the leader of Catch Point. And it is kind of tough sometimes to be the new version when you're so much the same. But if you do kind of split off Yehi, which is important to now making Williams look completely different, with his Catch Point being Jaka and Dickinson, who are already really different. And I know that, you know, I mean, Williams has the suicidal tendencies, knockoff parody shirt, and Dickinson and Jaka are really like into like metal, and their tag was, or their stable before was Doom Patrol, so they're into like doom metal. And so I think if you kind of play up that side of Catch Point, really change the imagery as the new Catch Point looks kind of like a metal band shirt, then you can kind of start to build this with Williams being his own character and not just a knockoff Drew Galloway. I think that this could work. And yeah, Yehi out of here and now being pushed as a singles commodity. You're right. I didn't necessarily think that he fit in Catch Point, but I think that it was a good home for him to build credibility in.
I agree with there completely. You know, I will say I was wrong and it actually worked. And I think, and also the concept, they weren't, I mean, back, like a year ago, they weren't quite having matches against one another at the time. And they started pushing that envelope more often, where it was about the competition. They did a good job of that, and it did establish Fred as a player.
Yeah, and I think that while his character didn't fit Catch Point overall at the time, I think it did help get him over.
And yep, the rub. He got the rub.
Yeah, and now spinning out of there, I think he is a guy who can be put in that top level.
Yep, for sure. Because he has such a unique charisma. Then we got Williams and Dickinson. What are your thoughts here?
I thought that Williams, again, he came across as kind of imitating Drew Gulak at times as the grumpy vet, kind of trying to grind him out. He's working over the whole body of Dickinson. Dickinson is able to kind of get out somewhat and really kind of wrestle with him, but doesn't last long, as then he's pretty much put away quickly after that with the crossface. Again, I think that this felt like a match that would have happened on a few Evolves maybe 20, 30 ago with Drew Gulak doing this to Tracy Williams, and it would have had a lot more emotion and come across a lot grittier, a lot more kind of roughneck, and like the old man is stretching him out, and here it didn't have that emotion, didn't really draw me in as much. 2¾ star for the technical work. Again, Dickinson also not a super dynamic seller from underneath, so that did not help Williams' case here in establishing himself for this match. But, yeah, that's kind of my take. What do you got there, Pete?
Yeah, I had the same exact thing, 2¾, and everything you said, I mirror it exactly. It's just, yeah, it was technically a good war match, but it just didn't – the crowd just wasn't really giving a shit all that much either. And you know what? Now in the next match, ACH versus Xhaka – the crowd didn't give a shit either, and the crowd pretty much dead the whole entire way. And, man, ACH absolutely does absolutely nothing for me nowadays almost. I mean, every now and then he'll do something really well, but it just seems like he goes through his spots, and it's like an ACH match almost. It's almost like a routine in a way. And gave it 2¼. What about you? What do you think of it?
For Xhaka ACH?
Yeah.
I loved Xhaka in this match, and I thought that his charisma really came through. And I like ACH's Evolve character. His work isn't quite getting there yet. It's like he's trying to play up this, I'm not doing a lot of kind of high-flying stuff, but it's not quite there yet. But I thought that Xhaka, his physicality, his cutoffs, using his raw strength to counter ACH pretty much constantly was good. The ACH nut check thing pisses me off. I mean, he's supposed to kind of be a baby face, and that's just such a juvenile move in general. It just makes me think of fucking middle school pranks and shit. It doesn't make me think of wrestling. So, yeah, I can't get behind that. I gave this 2¾ star also. Same thing. I mean, the crowd's not into it. The crowd's into Xhaka, but they're not into ACH. ACH is the kind of playing subtle heel, maybe. And it didn't really have much, but I thought Xhaka was really good here and kind of showed off.
Yeah, I think ACH needs to go full-blown heel. I think people are fed up with his... Everyone knows he's kind of immature, and they kind of look at him, and you're like, you know, it's the same shtick over and over, and it's not even funny. It's kind of, you know, annoying in a way, and I think it's time, you know. Give him a heel run. I mean, we just lost Galloway. We need a new lead heel. Let it be. Give ACH a run. See if it fits. Because this character is just not. I mean, he's over. Don't get me wrong. But really, once the belt goes, unless he has an opponent, an engaging opponent, a lot of times it's just like, you know, he does a lot of bad shtick, and it just doesn't work. Can you see ACH as a heel?
Yeah, and I think it could work here if he was serious heel. And yeah. cut out the nut check little shot, because I don't like it at all. But if he's playing kind of more of a subdued, not a subdued, but more of a kind of toned down offense heel with the big kind of strikes that he can do, I think that he could definitely get over.
Yep. And what do you think of Lee and Star that was up next?
Lee and Star, I mean, it was kind of felt similar to some of the stuff we're seeing on NXT when it came to squash matchiness, but a lot more competitive because it's Evolved. But I think this was all about Keith Lee, and it almost made Star look kind of bad that Keith Lee really at times felt like he wasn't taking him seriously at all, and it didn't really come back to haunt him much. I did like Star's firing up, and his offense looked good when he was kind of staggering Keith. And I talked about Mike Elgin not knowing how to protect himself as a big man. I think that Keith Lee did a fantastic job here, not bumping for everything, really kind of staggering, but keeping control, and then catching big cutoffs like that huge spine buster that just looked amazing. And then finally gets the finish with the ground zero that looked fantastic. And I thought that this definitely was good to kind of build back some credibility on Keith. As what's funny is I don't necessarily think that he has a losing record in Evolve, but people seem to think that he does. So I think this was a good solid win that you could give him over a really popular guy on the indies right now who's building a lot of credibility. And I think it helps kind of keep him over in the company. I gave it 3.5 star for the match itself. I thought it was really good, but I was expecting a lot more out of this match, and I think that if David Starr was allowed to be David Starr as he has been more on the indies and stuff in here, and not necessarily as much just a setup guy to help get Keith over, I think that these two could have had a much better match. And actually, they did have a much better match in XWA.
Okay, that's very fair then. I mean, I enjoyed this match. I gave it 3.5/2. And I felt it was like a different type of Keith Lee match. It felt like this was his match to shine, but he also had to make Lake Star credible. But it was definitely Lee's match to win and shine out, but he also had to help Star along and give Star credibility, because this was, like they said, it was his first Evolve appearance, right?
Yeah, his first Evolve, but not his first WWN appearance.
Yeah, first Evolve, so they were like giving him like, by being able to go this long with Keith Lee, that was kind of like the rub they were giving him, and I thought they did a good job with that dynamic. I enjoyed Lee with like controlling early, and I like Lee when he misses the squash and Star gets offense off the opportunities. So I mean, I really like the narrative, and then of course you have this giant man versus Star, so that dynamic also plays into effect. And I thought Lee did a pretty good job establishing Star as a future, as a potential player in Evolve, where I didn't think he took enough, didn't destroy him, didn't squash him, but beat him enough to where Lee gets a good win, but also like, hey, this kid has a future. Next up, the match I was most looking forward to was Freddie Ahai versus Kyle O'Reilly, and I personally did not think I thought they delivered for me, man. I gave it 4.25 stars. Loved the grappling early. I loved Yehai holding the head low. I loved the stomp on the hand to the leg. I thought Yehai's offense is so unique. Finally, O'Reilly catches him. Loved the attempted armbar by O'Reilly. Yehai back to the leg and the toes and stuff. Yehai selling the arm big. A lot of great stuff, a lot of great grappling, and a really great showcase match for both guys. Well, what do you think of the match?
I'm right there with you. 4.5 for me. This is a war with limb selling and limb attacks that are just done amazingly. As they stand and throw strikes at the weakened limbs back and forth, that was just epic. As Yehai is, I love the way he comes down almost, it's a kick, but it's a stomp to the knee that's posted on the mat, as then Kyle O'Reilly is throwing those big kind of side kicks to the arm of Yehai. I mean, Yehai looks pissed off as he's down on the mat for the count. And then he kips up, and god damn, wasn't that a great spot? As Yehai kips up, takes everything he can, but crumples back down because his arm is so messed up. It was like he thought, maybe I got the adrenaline, I could pop up and get this. He gets up, but can't keep himself going. Love Kyle O'Reilly quickly countering a dragon suplex into a Kimura. Yehai goes after the knee again. It's every time he's after the knee. This was so good. Kyle O'Reilly then locks in the arm bar, and once he fully gets it locked in, boom, it's over. Instant tap out. And as I said, 4.5 star. Did not disappoint from what I was hoping from these guys. Two of the best guys on the indies right now, just going out here and showing why they're the best.
Agreed. What do you think of Zack Sabre and Lio Rush?
This was an interesting match. It was very reminiscent of Lio Rush versus Jay Lethal in ROH for the title a while back.
Yeah, that's how I was feeling it too, yep.
Yeah, I thought that one of the issues for me here, though, was just that Sabre, it's hard to remember that he's still a face in Evolve, out of like the only place where he's still kind of fully a face. But he's showing some cracks here and working subtly heel on top, so I'm enjoying that. I like that he could kind of barely put away Lio Rush. He gets the cradle pin that's a counter out of another cradle pin. And I love that they kind of told the story that Lio wouldn't give up. And that's why Sabre had to put him away with a pin. He would not tap out. Leo's fast striking felt at times like it was just overwhelming Sabre. It was a nice, good underdog fight. Lots of great fighting spirit from Lio, and And it was the kind of championship match that you want out of this kind of champion that really makes you believe that Lio Rush could maybe get it done next time. Maybe Lio would be able to beat Sabre next time. So I think that all in all, this was worked really well. I don't think either guy loses, or especially Lio Rush loses nothing in losing the match. Sabre, you know, doesn't lose anything from making Lio look so good. Both guys come out of it looking better and kind of excited to see them possibly wrestle again. And 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I liked it more than you. I give it 4, and I liked it more than the Lethal match.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I liked the feeling out process. Love the speed versus technical aspect of it. See Zach going after the leg, and he's just torturing Rush. But then we see this big dive, and Rush kind of shit-canned the legwork, which kind of pissed me off. The top rope move into a triangle is becoming pretty cliched at this point. Yeah, it still pops me, and I love it every time. But it's like, especially when you see him maneuvering on the mat to position himself to catch it, it's just kind of like, all right, now it's been beating a dead horse. Save it. Now it's become like a spot in every match. It's maybe a spot every 4 matches, maybe. So it won't be so always there type of thing. I thought this was a great underdog versus vet match. I thought it was worked to perfection. Then we got Riddle versus Galloway in the I Quit match. Man, I was a little disappointed in this. It wasn't horrible, but I gave it 3.25. I thought Galloway was punishing Riddle early, just beating the crap out of him. We see Riddle finally catches him in the corner. High impact moves from both guys. Loving all that. I thought Galloway's snap pile driver was just freaking nasty. The same with his stump DDT. Again, focusing on the neck, which Riddle's been telling a story about his injured neck. So I liked all that. Then we get this tying up of Riddle spot that took too long. And all we got out of it was Riddle standing up to him, getting punched. And then the ref cuts off the rope. We built all that spot for that payoff. That payoff sucked balls and was stupid. And then we get the sledgehammer, which I guess is their way to homage it to Triple H. Hated that. Liked all the action, but all the extracurricular nonsense, fuck off, just killed me. What do you think about this, man?
Yeah.
And let me say, I quit doesn't mean use all your weapons. An I quit match can be worked effectively with just guys just beating the crap out of each other, which I enjoyed the first 70% of the match, but then he got into shenanigans land, and it just pissed me off. Now go on, Tim. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I mean, so after the last man standing on 82, then you're going to do the I quit on 83, and it's both kind of stipulations that, number one, almost don't fit into Evolve's kind of motif, and are both stipulations that affect kind of the finish of matches in a way that takes away from what people love, the big pop of the 3 count for the pin. You kind of lose all of that. You lose every chance of like nice near falls that don't involve just standing around, either talking on the mic or waiting for the referee to count to 10. It's two stipulations that are very hard to overcome. As you talked about kind of the pure rules match being a stipulation that you don't buy into or don't like, these are both stipulations that I don't buy into, because I find that they really lead to walk and brawl matches, matches with like really flat finishes, matches with long periods of time of just standing around. And that's kind of what happens here.
It's also a style, which I think we've talked about before, where I think it's like we talked about the main event on WXW with Walter. And he's one of the few guys who can actually do a really believable brawl. I think it's a style that it's almost like dead now, where people don't do it real well because they're more into the high spots, and brawling is about impact. And it's a style that a lot of people don't do well nowadays. And then to actually build a whole entire match around it, it almost kills them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it does, as you talk about Walter, I mean, it you think of that 16-carat final match where Walter's primary weapon for the entire match was the chop. I mean, I'm sorry, but having a really good chop is super cool and makes a lot of noise. And he beat Ilya's chest to to just a bloody pulp, but no one's going to get over from throwing good chops. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's been how many decades of wrestling, and the only person that people remember when it comes to the chop is Ric Flair. And that's it. So, I mean, maybe Ricky Steamboat. But, you know, so it is about, are you willing to sacrifice the flash and the flair and getting yourself over with your big moves to make a brawl work? And a lot of guys aren't willing to do that. There's long torture stretches in here with Galloway. I mean, Riddle sells well, but at the same time, I've talked many times that I think Riddle sells too much. I think he's a great seller, but I also think that he has a lot of credibility that he kind of bastardizes and has completely wasted by selling so much. What made Riddle such a hot commodity early on was that he ate up opponents in under 10-minute matches where it looked like he was just unbeatable, and now he's turned into a guy who's... I mean, he plays Ricky Morton for sometimes 80% of his matches. And I think it's really kind of zonked his mystique in some ways. Especially because a lot of times he comes right back from selling like death to then just instantly put a guy's away with like 3 or 4 big spots.
Like when Steamboat would make his comebacks, it was like a gradual thing. It wasn't like with Riddle, sometimes it's like a switch gets turned on, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think that this match kind of brought out the worst of both guys. The tying up sequence, I've heard people putting it over like, oh, he pissed the ref off so much and it plays off of other stuff to do with the ref. And I kind of get it, because the night before, the idea was that Galloway said he didn't trust to have a match with Sabre because he couldn't trust the referees not to screw him. So I kind of see that the ref is mad. But I don't feel that they played it off enough, and I don't think that they built it enough to where it was...
Sure, hell, they didn't cover it in commentary very well.
And, I mean, I hate any kind of angle that puts heat or puts shine on the referee. I'm sorry, but I don't need to... Oh, man, you know, the referee really stood up for himself. Nah, fuck off. I want the wrestlers to stand up for themselves, you know what I mean?
But, yeah, I'm with you.
So, yeah, Riddle comes back. There's nice headbutt from Galloway that I like. The pile drivers, a lot of the action was good here. The finish was nice with the bro mission, with the kind of open hand strikes to the abdomen with the bro mission locked in, and Galloway finally quits. I'm with you. 3.25 star. I think that the match had a lot of flaws and could have been a lot better, and honestly, I bet if I was live in the building, my rating would be even lower, because this is not the kind of match that I like to see live on a wrestling show at all.
Yeah, not in this decade. Man, with that said, Tim, I thought it was an easy thumbs up show, even though the main event fell flat. I thought it was still a main, really strong show. For me, I had 2 4-star-plus matches on there, and 1 at 3.5. So I give it a thumbs up, man. What about you?
Yeah, definite thumbs up. And as I said, I think this main event delivered stronger than the main event from 82. So that helped a lot. 82 really was hurt by the fact that the main event was really bad. And then, you know, the Kyle O'Reilly, Keith Lee match with the wonky kind of finish hurt that one as well. But, I mean, everything else on this card really delivered strong. I think that they made a lot of guys... I mean, they really kind of upped the stock on Yehi, number one, looked so much better. I think they upped the stock on Leo Rush, made him look like a big deal. Keith Lee and David Starr come out looking like big deals. So, I mean, this was a card that did really, really well to help build guys. Kyle O'Reilly, I mean... Kyle O'Reilly almost felt like a guy who came in here similarly to Chris Hero. When Chris Hero first came into Evolve, but actually, I mean, at that time he wasn't seen as a big deal. Kyle O'Reilly comes across almost at the same level as Kota Ibushi when he came back to Evolve the year before at WrestleMania, where it feels like he's coming in as a special attraction, big deal guy, and kind of already is above
him. Fresh shot in the arm for the company.
Exactly, and so he instantly feels like a big deal. So this show makes Evolve feel like it's on a positive swing up. A lot of guys building, a lot of big-time stars in the company, so definitely a thumbs-up show.
Yeah, I totally agree. Do you got anything you got to plug, man?
No, the Lucha Undead will be back eventually. I know that everyone's probably wondering why we haven't done episodes for like a month. Adrian got married, took a little break because of that. I've been kind of bad about scheduling stuff. We just haven't been able to put it together, but it will be back. We'll do it live. Most recent episode with the first time pairing of the Lady J and Dylan Hales talking about Nova Pro. Great episode. Great wrestling company. Good. I mean, go check out Nova Pro in general if you haven't. They have a lot of great matches. And otherwise, just follow me on Twitter @LuchaUndead.
Yeah, keep on following me over on Space City and NWA On Demand Podcast. I was just on Clotheslines and Headlines last week. Check that one out, where I preview the Wrestle Circus show I'm going to tomorrow, along with my going down to the Hall of Fame next month, and I previewed that, my trip. So check that out if you're interested in either one of those things, or just like listen to me talk. And follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. And remember, guys, there's all types of wrestling out there. Lucha, Japanese, Southern, old school, new age, high spots. I mean, whatever you want, whatever you're into, find something you like, watch it, enjoy it. That's the key to wrestling. There's so much out there. Try not to complain as much. Yeah, it's fair to be critique, but hearing this, I mean, we're fans of wrestling, so I'd like to hear some more positivity out there, is what I'm getting at. Have a great weekend, folks.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perceptions are best.